Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast here.
Been seeing you guys' podcast have blown up here recently, so glad to get on.
It's Tuesday, April 4th. We are continuing our teams that will shape the draft series. Later today, we've got the people's insider, Charles Robinson, to tell us what's going on inside Jim Irsay's brain as we talk about the Indianapolis Colts. That's a frightening place to live. That makes me feel uncomfortable, but makes me very, very comfortable and very happy. We've got to break down the Detroit Lions, a report from Detroit, from the state of Michigan itself, the great, the wonderful, our very own Scott Pienowski. Scott, it's been too long. What's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. It's good to talk to you. Good to talk NFL. And I can say from somebody who's on the ground 20 minutes from Detroit, this is the hopes of the city rest with the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Tigers are a horrible baseball team. It's been a long time since the Red Wings have had anything of note. And it feels like the Detroit Pistons are in a 20-year rebuilding mode. There's some good college stuff going on. Michigan hockey team is in the Frozen Four. We know Michigan State was in the NCAA basketball tournament. Juwan Howard's trying to ruin the Michigan basketball program as we speak. But for pro sports in Detroit, it's very bleak right now, and the Lions offer hope. That's what every fan wants. They want, on opening day, they want the hope that we're going to contend, the hope that maybe we could make a playoff push. And you know, Detroit was almost a playoff team last year. A lot of people thought they were the best team that didn't make the playoffs, even though they didn't need that Green Bay game. They were already eliminated Sunday night. They went to Lambeau and took it to the Packers. I don't know. I don't know if Dan Campbell is like a 10-year answer at head coach, but for now, they're buying what he's selling, and the city of Detroit looks to the Lions with, you know, misty eyes, because we want some hope here. We want a team that can maybe make a play. You know, they don't even want a Super Bowl in Detroit. They'd be happy if they made the playoffs. If Jared Goff can win a playoff game here, they'll make a statue of the guy.
Are they the longest Well, I mean, we'll talk about the Lions in depth, obviously, but are they the longest current playoff win drought right now, the Detroit Lions, in the NFL?
It was 1991 or something like that. Oh, no, Stafford won. Stafford had a playoff win. Stafford had one playoff win in Detroit. It's funny, you know, I'll like go to one of the city casinos and play poker, and Stafford will come up. Obviously won the championship with the Rams the previous season. A lot of people will dump all over the guy. Look, when they got Matthew Stafford, they got him with the number one pick because they were terrible. The fact that Stafford made them respectable for a decade, I think that's a huge win. There's different opinions on this. We're going to talk about an NFL starter who may be on the outs with his team later in this show. If you get a quarterback, and there's going to be a lot of quarterbacks drafted this year, right? If you draft a quarterback and he makes you like what Andy Dalton did with the Bengals, where you go to the playoffs a lot, would they go 0-7, I think, with the Dalton-Marvin Lewis combination, but he took a bad team and made them relevant. To me, that's a win. To me, what Stafford did in Detroit was a win. To me, what Jared Goff is doing right now is a win. I think we get a little bit too championship or bust, or, you know, Final Four or bust, or stuff like that. When you take a program that hasn't been good for a while and they actually become relevant, interesting, a team that people want to put on primetime, to me, that's a win, man. It doesn't mean that should be your ultimate goal. You're allowed to dream higher than that. But I get sad when people in Detroit say bad things about Stafford. I think he had a great run in Detroit. I mean, maybe not a Hall of Famer. He still has to add to the resume with the Rams. We'll see if he's able to do that. But I think if you get relevant when you haven't been relevant, to me, that goes down as a gigantic W.
Dude, I couldn't agree with you more. The season was a waste if we didn't win the Super Bowl. 31 teams are going to think their season's right. A waste. And most of these fan bases, like the Saints are a great example. Everybody's always dogging on the Saints, like, you got to rebuild. I'm not saying I agree with what the Saints are doing, but Saints fans get to go into basically every single season feeling like, you know what? Most times on Sunday, we're going to be happier than not. We're going to be happier instead of miserable. We're going to have a pretty good time all season. Or Sundays, we can drink beer and have fun and hope our team wins, and we might even just make a playoff push. So you've got to find some gratification in something beyond just winning the Super Bowl. I love the Lions' optimism. By the way, though, I just looked it up. They actually have the current 31 years since their last playoff win. It was 1992. So Stafford never, I think he went to the playoffs. Okay. He never actually won a playoff game. The Dolphins are second, 22 years. The Raiders are third with 20. And then we get to the Commanders, the Jets, the Bears with 17, 12, and 12. They do have the longest playoff drought. So a little hope, a little, you know, Luke Skywalker style, a new hope for the Detroit Lions is a pretty welcome thing here. We are going to get to the Lions.
Listen to you, Matt Harmon, movie maestro, throwing just seamlessly. I don't even know that much about Star Wars, but I know that to me, Star Wars should be the name of the movie, not Episode 1, A New Hope, or Episode 4, New Hope, or whatever it's called. To me, it's Star Wars, but I love, look at you just turning into Roger Ebert, seamlessly weaving in a movie reference.
I could probably, like, your total movie knowledge probably equals, like, my Star Wars knowledge of things that nobody needs to know about Star Wars. Actually, it's pretty funny. When my now wife and I moved in together into this house, I had like three Star Wars the original Star Wars movie posters like in the living room of my apartment. And I was like, where can I put these in the new house? And she's like, oh, how about the stairs leading down to the garage? That was the only place they're prepared.
Right,
to go. So
right.
I'm a certified Star Wars movie guy, even if I don't know the rest of the movie.
Let me clean up a couple of things here. I'm embarrassed to have gotten this wrong. Matthew Stafford, as you said, 0-3 as a playoff member of the Lions. They lost to the Saints. They lost to Dallas and they lost to Seattle. The Dallas game was kind of controversial. There's some, one thing I know about Detroit is if there's a team that seems to get screwed by wonky officiating, and last year it was in a game they didn't play in, it was that Seattle game in Week 18 that seemed to have anti-Lions officiating in it. Maybe it's just a coincidence, but it sure seems like the Lions are the team that gets screwed by the weirdest officiating calls over the years. And I'll say one last thing about movies, and I know Brett's probably pulling his hair out, producer Brett, our dear friend. Even though I'm not a big Star Wars guy, can we agree that the greatest movie in that franchise is The Empire Strikes Back?
Without question, totally agree with that. It's probably one of my favorite movies of all time. Although I think my sneaky second favorite is actually Rogue One in terms of the like newer Star Wars movies. I mean, obviously you got to put the original up there as well.
Sure.
Star Wars, you know, A New Hope, as you mentioned, it should just be called Star Wars. Since there's like 5 billion Star Wars properties now at this point, it's tough to just call it Star Wars. But yeah, Rogue One, I thought was a great movie, start to finish. It's a total banger. The new Cassian series was awesome as well. But yeah, I mean, Scott, I could literally take the rest of the podcast talking Star Wars, but I agree with you. Empire Strikes Back, the GOAT Star Wars movie. I will not hear any arguments. You and I are on the same page there.
The GOAT character flip, right? The GOAT, you know, reveal. I'm going to spoil this because this movie came out, 42 years ago, 43 years ago. Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father. That's just fantastic, man. You can't get a better hook than that.
Yeah. Dude, obviously I watched it as a kid, you know, with my dad. So not at the time, you know, in live action, but still like the first time you see that, I know it's just culturally obvious now, but the first time you see that, yeah, it's like mind blowing. So totally agree with you there. We're on the same page. We'll put a pin in the Lions. We'll put a full pin in the Star Wars. We're not going to come back to that, although you never know. We'll come back to the Lions later on in the show. We do have a few pieces of minor news items here to clean up before we talk Detroit. First of which, NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah, my pal, DJ, reports that the Titans are a team to, quote, keep an eye on as a candidate to move up to the third overall pick. It's no secret, Scott, that the Cardinals would love to trade down from that spot. They'd love to entice a quarterback needy team up the board. I think the Titans, you know, they have Ryan Tannehill. I'm kind of ready to believe anything about the Titans quarterback position this year. DJ also mentioned the Raiders in the same breath as a team that people think around the league. You got to keep an eye on them to move up to the third overall pick. So interesting, Scott. These two teams, the Raiders are kind of obvious, and we're going to feature them on a later Teams That Shape the Draft episode. But the Titans specifically, I find odd because they're in a strange kind of era of their team build where they're sort of one foot in. Well, I think they're more like one toe in the old era of Titans football and nine toes into the next era. And a trade up to the third overall pick would be very aggressive for this particular team at this particular point of that rebuild process.
Well, the first question every team has to ask is, where are we at quarterback? And Ryan Tannehill, kind of sneaky old. He turns 35 this summer. So It just doesn't seem like the NFL ages in dog years. I mean, Tennessee was the number one seed in the NFL last year, the previous year in the AFC, which just seems like 10 years ago because they're obviously not anywhere near contention right now. But I could see if they have a quarterback they like and they want to go that route, I could see it. It feels like they have to press the restart button. I don't know. They have a coach they like, but Ryan Tannehill is certainly, and he's had a nice career. I mean, he, for whatever reason, the dots never lined up for him in Miami. And then he went to Tennessee at the right time. He probably fell into the right coaching at the right time, had a nice run. And then they said, oh, okay, well, you don't need AJ Brown anymore. We'll ship him off to Philadelphia, see how that goes. But I feel like they need to find their next 10-year quarterback or next 5-year quarterback. And so I could see them going after somebody in the draft.
Yeah, I just wrote a team needs quarterback piece today. I bucketed them in like the moderate need group. Like they definitely need to, you know, think about the next era of the quarterback position there. But like I said, Scott, I'm ready to believe anything. I'm ready to believe that they think about their next signal caller this year. I'm also ready to think that they ride out Tannehill this year in the last year of his contract. I'm also ready to think that they trade Tannehill to, I'm not sure who it would be, but some sort of team that's, you know, could use a little boost at quarterback. At this point, a lot of the chairs are filled, but I'm could conceivably see them trade him away. And then like they just look to 2024 completely with a new GM in place, like you said, a coach they trust. And like, I don't think the coaching staff believes Malik Willis is the answer at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw what they did with him last year, but they could sell the fan base on like, all right, we're going to start Malik Willis for 8 games and, you know, somebody, some other rookie for 8 games or whatever. And that's like plausible upside when really thinking we're going to take our next franchise quarterback next year. Either way, though, I will say if the Titans drop a quarterback from this draft class into this current roster, they're not really set up to succeed because I do not think this is a good looking offensive roster.
Have you talked at all about teams tanking for Caleb Williams?
I mean, we've tacitly mentioned it, but you know, it's funny, Scott, if you look back at like these successful quarterback picks, most of them didn't come from like a full on tank. It came from a team that like the Chargers hit a weird year and they ended up taking Herbert in the top 10 of the draft. Mm-hmm. Obviously certain teams like Burrow and, you know, if they go number one overall, it's one thing, but a lot of the other guys were like trade up candidates too. If you just look back at like recent guys who've hit, but no, yeah, I that's obviously, That's going to be part of the conversation with like them and a few other teams.
Yeah, the one hit relatively recently, I guess, would be Andrew Luck. And there's another case where, you know, never got near a Super Bowl, but I think that goes down as a gigantic win because he was a rock solid starter for about a decade. And man, it doesn't seem that long ago that he just retired out of nowhere. And good for him. You know, if you can get out of the game with some money and your health or some, you know, decent amount of health. I know he took a lot of hits and he admitted it and compromised his life. But a lot of times, I remember one year Football Outsiders was projecting who would be on the clock the next year. And they were talking about the Brom closet because I thought Brian Brom would be the first overall pick. That shows you. I'm not picking on FO. They're awesome. And you know, yeah. You know me, I'm a DVOA wonk and you know, Aaron Schatz and his crew do a great job. But that just shows you how much the idea some years, and every year is different, but some years the idea of who the hot quarterback is, that could be, we can feel totally different about that 6 months from now, nine months from now, 12 months from now. In the case of Caleb Williams, I don't think anybody expects that we're not going to all be in love with Caleb Williams 12 months from now.
Yeah, every now and again when I'm charting a receiver, I'm really taking note of the quarterback as well. It's definitely been that way with all the Ohio State guys and CJ Stroud. And
for sure.
Watching Jordan Addison with USC this past year, the one thing I keep telling myself every single game, like, yeah, Caleb Williams is a dude. Not a hot take because everybody loves him. But yeah, he's an easy guy to see why the potential is there. Well, Scott, I hope you had a wonderful Valentine's Day this year. I personally had a wonderful Valentine's Day this year. Dalvin Cook might have not had as much fun on Valentine's Day because he underwent a shoulder surgery on February 14th. And I think this is a big explanation as to why Minnesota has not cut or traded him just yet. According to Ian Rapoport, the shoulder is, quote, much more stable than it had been, and he is on his way to 100% recovery. Scott, I'm curious what you think happens with this Minnesota backfield, because like I mentioned, Cook, I think they've wanted to move on from him this year, but this current injury is sort of holding it up. You know, they brought back Alexander Mattison for decent money. I also think they could add her back in this year's draft as well, that usurps or at least provides a 1B type of complement to Alexander Mattison. How do you see this situation playing out?
Yeah, even without this shoulder hovering over the situation, which I guess has put it in a holding pattern, I was nervous about Cook. He turns 28 this year before the fresh season. That's a very dangerous age for a running back. And we talked about how financially it might make sense for Minnesota. Just this is their dropping off point and move on. You know, have Mattison be the bridge player, maybe draft somebody interesting in the mid rounds of the draft, which we know the draft has shifted in recent decades now, where it used to be if you needed help at running back, oh, gonna take a running back in the first round. That's not really a thing anymore. If you like a running back, you might target him in the second, third, or fourth round, and that's totally reasonable. That guy might play as a rookie. So it seems like Minnesota, and they're kind of in a funny place, right? I mean, they a team that won games, but they didn't, their metrics didn't validate their record. Nobody really thought they were a threat to win the NFC, and of course they didn't win the NFC, but the division, Green Bay's resetting. Detroit, with all the optimism, they're still, it's like 10-7, 9-8 optimism. Nobody thinks Detroit's going to rip up the NFL. The Bears have a lot of draft capital. We'll see if they can do something with it. I feel like Minnesota in a stronger division might be like, okay, which way are we going with this? But the NFC North is so weak, they have to feel like they're the favorites. Maybe they talk themselves into another year from Cook. If I were a Vikings consultant, I'd say this is the time to get out.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think they view it the same way. This is also like an analytics sort of friendly front office, although they've made some moves that might not necessarily jive with that. You'd think that they don't want to spend major resources at the running back position. Like Alexander Mattison on a decent contract and a rookie makes complete sense for that type of operation. It's also interesting with the Vikings too that they didn't kick the Kirk Cousins can down the road. Like they didn't borrow from the bank of Kirk Cousins by extending him and smooth his salary out. Like they're eating their medicine right now, which they normally don't do. So I don't know, they're a fascinating team. You know, Cook has been a fantasy stud for a long, long time. Alexander Mattison's also been like a pet favorite of the fantasy community because he can just jump right in and replace Dalvin Cook's production. So I think that's an interesting situation to monitor the rest of the way. Scott, we could absolutely not have you on. And thank God the Patriots have provided fodder for this. Couldn't have you on and not hit on this story. Mac Jones, according to Mike Florio, has been shopped around by the Patriots this offseason. NBC Sports' Tom Curran believes that Patriots head coach Bill Belichick was, quote, agitated with Mac Jones for, one, seeking outside counsel on the Patriots offense, which I don't blame him. You know, the Patriots installed two dudes who don't know a damn thing about quarterbacks as his quarterback coach and offensive play caller. So Bill Belichick didn't like that. Also, and this I can sympathize with Bill on, was not really happy with, you know, Mac Jones constant, like being agitated, glaring at the sideline, like losing his mind out there. Like, come on, bro, you're Mac Jones. Like you're not a stud quarterback at this point. So I get that part of it. It's also worth noting Mark Daniels of Mass Live, I saw reported that he talked to three NFL sources about the Patriots shopping Mac Jones. One said that's news to me. A second said that the Pats haven't contacted the Bucks. A third said that the Patriots haven't reached out to the Raiders about Mac Jones. Just doesn't add up to him. So either way, if this is going to happen, it's not going to happen with the whole Mac Jones trade thing. Let's just talk about the weird vibes around the Patriots right now.
Yeah, he said it, weird vibes. First of all, first rule of the Patriots when it comes to rumors and sources and everything, Tom Curran has been covering this team for an awfully long time, and he is as plugged in with the Patriots as anybody. So, you know, we all have different levels of confidence with different media members and stuff like that. And if Tom Curran says there's smoke with the story, there's smoke and there's fire. So I believe that Belichick's probably frustrated with Mac Jones. We know, as you said, Mac Jones last year showed his frustration with the coaching staff, showed his frustration with his body language. And I don't know why he decided to become the Grayson Allen of the NFL and just take all these, you know, Mac Jones was a bad pick. Okay, what member of the defense can I take a cheap shot at now? I just lose that, man. You're supposed to be better than that. It's, you have some respect for the guys on the other side of the ball. That's just, I hate to see that, man. But I don't know. Bill O'Brien's, you know, Mac Jones, this is the time to shine. Bill O'Brien's here. Mike Gesicki's here. This offense is going to take off to be like the 17th best passing game in the league next season. You don't want to go anywhere. The only thing worse than having Mac Jones as your quarterback if you're the Patriots is not having him, right? I mean, Billy Zappi had a moment last year, but I don't know that he projects as anything more than maybe an interesting backup. The Patriots don't probably draft early enough to take anybody all that interesting. Maybe they'll fall in love with somebody. Maybe they'll make a trade. I feel like the Patriots, I believe the Curran report, and I believe the women would love to trade Jones if they could. I think they might be stuck with each other for another season.
Yeah, I just don't really see like a taker. I think the best move would be to, again, I'm not sitting here and saying that the Patriots have stacked the deck for Mac Jones, but they're at least looking like a serious operation, if for no other reason than they have an actual offensive coordinator who has experience with grooming and mentoring quarterbacks in Bill O'Brien. So like these two, I think, kind of need each other at this point, because like, is Robert Kraft and Meek Mill going to get, you know, damn Lamar Jackson to New England? Probably not. But also, Scott, I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on just where Bill Belichick stands right now. Albert Breer reported that, and I think anybody that reading Robert Kraft's thoughts from the league meeting, you know, Albert Breer reported that there's a frosty bit of tension between Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft. Robert Kraft has, you know, kind of said, like, we don't want to sit on our past laurels. You know, nobody's judged on their past. They're kind of judged on their future performance. I'm paraphrasing, but still, I do think, like, I'm not saying Bill Belichick is on a hot seat right now, but I think Belichick's getting irritated with Mac Jones. I kind of think Robert Kraft's getting a little irritated with Bill Belichick at this point.
Totally fair. Belichick, by the way, turned 71 in a couple of weeks in the middle of April, and it's open to speculation. How long is a shelf life for an NFL head coach? It's such a demanding job. Belichick still seems mentally sharp. I think what Belichick's needed more than anything over the last few years is what we all need, is like a consigliere to talk us out of a bad idea. I think Belichick might have a little bit too much power in New England, because I don't think anybody deserves all the power at their feet, even somebody who's as accomplished as Belichick. And isn't it interesting that even when the Patriots were winning and when they were this dynasty that has obviously had a period put on it, that thing's been dead for a few years now, but it always felt like, yeah, he had a good working relationship with Tom Brady, but there was some frostiness there, and I'm not surprised it ended the way it did. And I always thought that respect between Kraft and Belichick, but it's not like they're best buddies. It's not like they're out on the boat together. They're going to Nantucket together. They're playing golf together. And that's okay. I mean, not working relationships don't have to be best friends. In fact, maybe it's better that you're not sometimes, but it's one of these things with Belichick. We joke about last year, like he was being typical, you know, prickly Bill in the press conference. And I was texting some of my friends, were like, you know, this is great when you're 11-4. You know, it doesn't play as well when you're 6-7 or something like that. You know, I would like to see Belichick get some more help. I'd like to see him. I think he's spread himself a little bit too thin. And I think he's at an age where it's just not realistic for him maybe to have the list of responsibilities that he has next to his name as a guy who's just about to turn 71. There are actually New England Patriot fans who would like to see Belichick move on. You know, let's give him the watch, give him the, you know, whatever in the stadium, the Ring of Honor, you know, say your nice things about him and move on. I would like him to actually stay, but I think maybe Bill O'Brien can really help here. I mean, look, the guys in the offensive room, as you mentioned last year, were overmatched. That was always a bad fit. It wasn't clear who was in charge for a while. There are people who really aren't offensive gurus who were in charge of an offense that really needed massaging, really needed some tinkering. And terrible fit. I'm a Bill O'Brien fan. I'm not sure he's the greatest head coach necessarily, but I think he's
another guy that got way too much power.
For sure. You can say that again, but I think he's going to be successful as much as anybody can be, given that the Patriots right now it's just their offense is so ordinary. It's not horrible. That's maybe the worst thing to be in the NFL sometimes is to be a purgatory team, right? The Patriots are not an AFC favorite, but they're not so bad that they're dreaming of Caleb Williams. They're not so bad that they're going to get CJ Stroud or, you know, one of these great quarterbacks. That could be a hard place to be, where it's like, yeah, you look in the mirror. Right now, they're probably the weakest roster in the AFC East. It's been a long time since we've said that. A good season for the Patriots next year might be 8 or 9 wins.
Yeah, and I think that's really fascinating as to what happens next. I think there's been a little bit over the last couple of years of, you know, Robert Kraft sort of putting the pressure on Bill Belichick. Anytime he speaks publicly, he talks about being frustrated about how they haven't won a playoff game, how he doesn't want them resting on their laurels, while Belichick is saying, like, what do fans have to be optimistic about? How about the last 25 years? Was his public remarks at the Arizona League meeting. So I think there's a little bit of tension there. I think there's been a brain drain in New England, absolutely, and their kind of like insistence to go for outside help, not just with the Mac Jones thing, but not ever going off the friends and family program, has been a deterrent as well. So fascinating thing to realize as Bill Belichick is trying to push his way into being the most, you know, winningest coach of all time. That's, I think, his biggest goal. But the Patriots' goals might eventually kind of run in contrast to that. So
Belichick can never say this publicly. I'll just put a period on this really quickly. He's never going to win another championship. I don't think that's going to happen, but he's obviously a history buff and he wants to be the winningest coach. And that's totally in sights. So now what's a win for Bill Belichick now? A win for Bill Belichick would be going 9-8 this season.
Going 9-8 for a couple of seasons. Yeah. Like just to finally get there.
Congratulations. All right. You're Jeff Fisher now.
Oh, terrific. What a treat. Eventually he'll run into the bottom out season, I guess, that Jeff Fisher had with the LA Rams, or the first year of the LA Rams. So, all right. Speaking of the LA Rams, let's go to the team that has been made rich by the LA Rams the last couple of years, the Detroit Lions. Scott, there's no way around it. The Lions are going to be like the media's favorite breakout team of 2023, if they even count, because they were so close to making the playoffs last year. The draft is not going to slow that down. We'll get to their draft haul in just a second, Scott, but I was just taking a look at this depth chart, taking a look at the roster, and looking at it as a whole, it's kind of weird to say for the Detroit Lions, but after signing Cam Sutton, CJ Gardner-Johnson, and Emmanuel Mosley in the secondary, there's not like that many premium pivotal positions, I think, that need a desperate facelift. On offense, they have a verifiable above average NFL starter in Jared Goff when he's in a good ecosystem, which this is definitely a good ecosystem, quality play caller they managed to retain, nice skill position options, and a strong offensive line. And the defense added pieces in the secondary that I just mentioned and have a dude up front in Aiden Hutchinson. So the Lions, Scott, like you mentioned at the top, hope abounds for this team.
Yes, but unfortunately, the way the roster is structured, as you said, they will not be the buzziest fantasy team at the draft, because what are they going to do? Probably take a nose tackle, probably take an offensive guard. The one skill talent deficiency I see on offense is probably tight end, and we know that tight ends are almost never relevant in the early parts of their career. So there's going to be a lot of teams that will draft players, and we're going to have to reevaluate where do they fit on the fantasy list of rankings. And at some point this spring, I'll do those. We were talking about that offline today. It's something I do. I like to see, you know, rank all the infrastructures, rank all the ecosystems, rank all the fantasy friendliness of the rosters. This should be a fantasy friendly roster. We know that, but it's because of the pieces that are already in place. Again, they've addressed the running back situation where they brought in Montgomery. Next year, Jameson Williams with his first full season. That will be fun. St. Brown has established himself as a very good player. Goff, as you said, I'm glad you said he's above average too. I think a lot of people want to say he's just an average quarterback. I don't think so. I think he's definitely better than a league average starter. And remember, even though Hutchinson had a great year on defense last year, he's out of Michigan, just a high motor. He's going to be a star for the next 10 years. They were still, I want to say, maybe 28th in DVOA and overall defense, and that both the pass and rushing defense were near the bottom. So there's certainly help that needs to be shored up. They need to shore up some positions. They address the secondary and free agency. I think their first pick is going to be a nose tackle or a guard, and that won't move the fantasy needle very much.
Yeah. The Goff thing is funny, I think, because I've always said that we kind of count his breakup with the Rams and the way that they so unceremoniously dumped him. We kind of counted against him twice. Like, we already knew at that point that Goff was a guy that you probably is more of a trailer than a truck. Like, he needs to be pulled along by the circumstances. And as I mentioned, the Lions are very good circumstance, but still, they'd almost like made it seem as if Jared Goff was just garbage. Like, he wasn't good or he wasn't physically talented. That's the thing with Goff. Like, I can't remember who it was, but there's someone I've heard say that he'll probably end up being like the last non-mobile, like net zero as a creator. He'll probably be the last guy like that ever taken at the top of the draft. Like, we're talking about Caleb Williams at the top of the show. Completely different style of quarterback than Jared Goff. But Goff can make all the throws when he's protected, when things are in rhythm, when things are right. And I think that certainly makes him an above average starting NFL quarterback. The question is just like the Rams ran into, What is the floor? What is the ceiling there? Can you eventually crack that glass ceiling? And how good does the roster need to be around Jared Goff to do that? And on that note, Scott, with the draft specifically, they're sitting nicely with the 6th overall pick, courtesy of the LA Rams. They also have the 18th overall pick. And I kind of want to live in two different worlds with the Lions in the draft here, if you'll humor me. And to me, either world is completely defensible. World number one, let's live in that right now. They take advantage of what they think is going to be a unique situation. Not in Lions history, this is not unique, them having a top 10 pick. But they don't think going forward they're going to be one of these teams picking in the top 10. And they go ahead and take a quarterback. You know, because of that glass ceiling, like I mentioned with Jared Goff, as much as we just praised him, there's certainly that glass ceiling. It seems crazy to imagine at this point, but it is definitely possible that one of Anthony Richardson or Will Levis falls to 6. And aren't they the perfect incubator for a young, high upside quarterback who needs a little bit of extra marinating?
Sure. That's certainly a path they could go on where they wouldn't need him to play right away. And maybe you have that bridge season. Remember that John Kitna, and Goff's a lot better than Kitna, but John Kitna had that bridge year where he played before Carson Palmer took over in Cincinnati, or more recently, of course, Alex Smith, who maybe is a different style of play, but maybe a more reasonable comp. For Goff, you know, Alex Smith was always a good player too. Was he an MVP candidate? No. I also think he was fantasy quarterback 4 that final season when he handed it off to Mahomes. But, you know, that's
crazy.
Look, I realize that if you're trying to find the next Patrick Mahomes, good luck to you. You know, those guys come around like once every 30, 35, 40 years, whatever. I mean, he's one of one. So, you know, lots of luck if you think any of these guys, as much as I like some of these quarterbacks, I don't want to put anybody with that tag. It's just not fair to a player. But I can see them going that way. I tend to think that to me would be the analytic move, would be, okay, yeah, playoffs would be nice. We want to be a team that can contend for championships for a 5 or 10 year window. And the only way to do that in the NFL really is to get a superstar quarterback, which Jared Goff, it's too big of a leap to say he's that. So I could see that. I think that would be actually a really proactive, kind of progressive way to go. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to say, well, hey, we're close. We haven't won the playoff game since 91, I think it was, we came up with. So let's maybe they're going to not let good be the enemy of great. And then maybe they're just going to say, well, going to the playoffs and winning a game would be a big win for us. And let's try to make our team the best we can make it on the field next year. I don't think they're going to go the quarterback route. I think it would actually be more fun. And probably if you're a championship driven model team, I think it would make more sense to go that route. Because as you said, they're not going to pick in the top 10 probably for a while now, if the team is as strong as it looks. And there's a lot of teams in the NFC that aren't that good. So even if Detroit hits a little bit of a skid, I think their bottom out is only like, what, 6-11 or 7-10? I'm still getting used to 17 game schedule. I missed the 16 game schedule. Yeah, Matt, you think just adding one game wouldn't be that big of a deal? It's kind of like, Matt, this is something you're going to be living with, you know, time zones, right? Like I go to visit California or something. It doesn't sound like that big of a deal. It's just a 3-hour difference, but you're constantly not sure what time it is. It sounds so stupid, but it really is true. But anyway, I wish it'd go back to 16 games. I don't think they're going to go that quarterback route, but I like the way you mapped it out. And I think there's a strong case to consider it.
Barring the, you know, aside from the fact that Patrick Mahomes became Patrick Mahomes, I do think that's a great example for teams like the Lions, though, that they had a verifiable starter in Alex Smith, who I also think was above average when he was in a good ecosystem. I mean, he was like the most efficient deep ball passer in the NFL, like you said, the year before he handed it off to Patrick Mahomes. He was awesome with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. I mean, obviously, like, I feel like very few players wouldn't be awesome with those two guys, but regardless, he definitely was a needle mover for the Chiefs, but they wanted to crack that glass ceiling that they had with Alex Smith. Totally get it. Understand. And they ended up trading up. They didn't, you know, pick Patrick Mahomes at their natural pick. They targeted the guy. And obviously this would not be the Lions' natural pick here at 6 overall. They wouldn't have to trade up or anything. Although, I mean, you never know. They could move up a few spots or something like that, but it's just an interesting exercise because I don't think Will Levis, I certainly don't think Will Levis is going to be Patrick Mahomes, and Anthony Richardson's the most like athletic quarterback we've ever seen play the position, but I still think it would be a stretch that he becomes Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or something like that. But we also didn't think Patrick Mahomes was going to be Patrick Mahomes before he became Patrick Mahomes. So it's just an interesting thought exercise because it would not set the team up for success this year, but it could set the 2024, 2025, 2026 Lions to have a guy who is better than Jared Goff and can take advantage of the situation more than Goff can. And this is a great situation, as we mentioned. So that's World 1, but let's actually spend more time living in World 2, because I'm with you. I think it's the more realistic one. In this one, they essentially commit to sticking with Jared Goff for the next 2 to 3-ish years and just stack the roster around him, because as much as we've said good things about Goff, he does need a lot right around him to be a Super Bowl contending type of quarterback. So then at the 6th overall pick, kind of what do you see happening in that scenario?
Yeah, it's either a guard or a defensive lineman. A nose tackle would make a lot of sense. And Goff, as you mentioned, he doesn't turn 29 until the middle of October. So we've been talking about some of these other quarterbacks. You know, Tannehill's in his mid-30s. Cousins is in his mid-30s. You'd like to think, whatever you think of Goff, and you and I both think he's above average, why can't he be that way for another 3 or 4 seasons? I think they're going to make a fantasy irrelevant. Not that you don't want to make your defense better or you don't want to get a good offensive lineman, but they will not move the fantasy needle with their first pick. It will be an interior lineman, I think.
And when you just look on the defensive side, because I feel like with the offensive line, they have some legitimate stars up
pieces,
front.
Sure, they sure do.
I mean, Penei Sewell is awesome, not just as a random pass catcher that one time, but he's just generally an ass kicker up front. They have Frank Ragnow, who's a great center. Would be, by the way, it'd be great to have him as a sort of the guy handing off to a young quarterback at one point. But they have enough dudes on the offensive line. So it's like, you know, are they going to be the Jalen Carter team if he falls out of the top 5 because of some of the off the field stuff? The corner class is supposed to be the strength of the draft class. And while they added guys like Emmanuel Mosley and Cam Sutton, I don't think that necessarily restricts you from taking a cornerback there if you really, really like one of those prospects. So I agree with you. I think they probably get somebody to wreck the front up there alongside Aiden Hutchinson, or maybe they get a potential shutdown corner, which, like you said, it doesn't make them fantasy relevant, but it's going to make their defense better, which that's definitely the weaker unit of the two sides. 18th overall, the Lions have that pick as well. And Scott, you've said this isn't going to necessarily be a big fantasy needle moving draft with the Lions, but I don't know, man. Like, am I crazy for thinking that Detroit needs at least one pass catching option from this draft, maybe two? You look at the receivers beyond Amon-Ra St. Brown. They have 2022 first rounder Jameson Williams. We've obviously seen like next to nothing from him based on the injury last year. They have Josh Reynolds, who's a holdover. They have Marvin Jones, who was like a quiet free agent signing. At tight end, they've got nothing. I mean, Brock Wright, Shane Zylstra, James Mitchell. And they have, in terms of their day two picks, in addition to that 18th overall, they have a second round pick, another second round pick from the Vikings. They have a third round pick that's pick 18 in the third round. And don't forget, like, we saw this front office trade up from their first second rounder last year to get a coveted target in Jameson Williams. So I'm with you. That guy would probably be a tight end, but I could also see them maybe not in the first round, because I don't think they have like they need a big body X receiver. And there are some guys that could be that guy in the second round. But I don't know, man, I could see Detroit coming away with some offensive players here.
Yeah, you make an interesting case. And because they have a pick surplus, that allows you to make a vanity pick sometimes, where if they see a receiver that slips in the first round, and again, receivers a lot like running back, where just because you don't take somebody in the first round doesn't mean you can't have high hopes for them. And we've seen tons of star talent migrate into the league in the second round. You know, the 2019 draft comes to mind. We always talk about with AJ Brown and DK Metcalf, and Terry McLaurin went in the third round of that draft. I don't know who the Patriots took. I can't remember, but
hard
wasn't
to say.
Wasn't one of those guys. But yeah, so maybe one of those second round picks, or maybe even a first round pick. If somebody slips, they say, okay, this way we all our eggs aren't in the Jameson Williams basket of him being a dominator. I always thought he was a weird pick just after he blows out his knee. I don't know. You're taking a guy who you know isn't going to help you right away, and then you get to hope on his rehab. I know science has come a long way, and you would think full recovery and everything, but now he ends up being like a redshirt player is what he was last year. He hardly got on the field, and that was to be expected. That was the plan all along. Well, you drafted this guy. It's not like he got hurt after you picked him. I don't think I would have gone that route, but you make an interesting point. Because they have the surplus of picks, that allows you to maybe take something that doesn't fit your theoretical needs the most, because you're not – the problem with most teams is they have an average amount of picks, or maybe even a below average amount of picks, and then you have to take what you need because you just don't have enough time to make up all the other stuff. Detroit can actually let its hair down and do some fun things because of that surplus. And of course, they could also trade up, which I think would be a mistake. I think it's better to pound the draft with a surplus of picks, take more bites at the apple, and hope that you land a couple of starters and maybe one guy who really outkicks his draft slot. That's what I would like to see them do. But you make an interesting case. Maybe if they find a receiver that they like, they won't take a running back, but a receiver they like, it would make sense. And they will take a tight end. If they go three rounds without taking a tight end, I'll be shocked. And that tight end could land at any point. I haven't studied the tight end draft class, and I don't know what you think of it, but maybe a second round tight end would make a lot of sense for this roster.
I could see it at 18th overall too, just because it's supposed to be a great tight end class. Everybody that looks at the tight ends this
Michael
year
Mayer's says, never getting to 18, right? That'd be way too late.
I don't know, maybe just because teams could look at it like there's a surplus of great tight ends available this year. Maybe we let one fall down the board a little bit and just get our guy in the second round, just like you said. And that might end up having Michael Mayer slip to 18. I could see that, you know, a Dalton Kincaid type who's more of like a split out tight end. I could see that as well. Just a lot of flexibility for Detroit this year. And like I mentioned, a big body X receiver would kind of complete this room. And like, even you look at Marvin Jones, he's been like that ball winning X receiver on the outside. I think signing him is not a guy you're counting on, but it sort of signals like, yeah, that's what we want out of our receiver core. Obviously he's played for the Lions before, not under this coaching staff, but just last thing before we get you out of here, Scott, because I feel like we've kind of covered the Lions here. The Jameson Williams thing, you mentioned it. Definitely an unexpected pick last year. I remember when they traded up for him, everybody's like, oh, this is quarterback. Like, oh yeah, they're definitely taking Malik Willis at this pick. Oh, okay. Everybody thought it was quarterback. It ended up being Jameson Williams. And man, like, you see Brad Holmes, the reaction when he got Jameson Williams, he was like pumped up, those post-draft videos, the GM Brad Holmes. Where do you stand on him from a fantasy perspective heading into year two? Because like I said, we've basically seen nothing from him. His first catch was a huge touchdown, which is to be expected. Legit speed, we all know that. But I think he's going to end up being a very hotly debated on fantasy Twitter from the people who don't go outside in the summer, based on like, we saw nothing from him as a rookie year. Some people are still really leaning on that college evaluation. Where do you come down on Jameson Williams this year?
Man, that's a great question. Yeah, he said his first catch, his only NFL catch, was a 41-yard touchdown. Talk about a big play threat, right? He's one NFL catch. It's a touchdown. And then in the final game of the season, he actually caught a long touchdown. I think it was a 66-yarder in that Packer game that was wiped out by a penalty.
Yeah.
So at least they were trying to show you what was possible, right? This is a guy who can get down the field, who can make splash plays. But maybe, is he going to be the true? It's so funny, the shape of his career, right? I mean, he gets to Ohio State, and he ultimately needs to find a program where he can play, so he goes to Alabama. You know, it's just crazy to me. It just shows you that the offensive talent, the wide receiver talent specifically, that's been stockpiled at Ohio State, it's been ridiculous. Like, oh, I got to go somewhere where it's an easier onboard. Okay, like, you know, the Crimson Tide, where Nick Saban doesn't recruit. He just goes like he's in a donut shop. I want that. I want that. I want that. I want that. He gets whatever he wants, pretty much. Of course, Ohio State, when it comes to receivers, is royalty too. I can't wait till Marvin Harrison Jr. is in the NFL. But I often say that wait for proof is a bad fantasy strategy. But in the case of Jameson Williams, I think I need a show me season. I don't think I'm going to draft him proactively.
And I just don't know that he profiles as like a volume sponge type of receiver. Mm-hmm. I think he could get 100 targets a year and do more with those 100 targets than some people do with 140, 150. But I don't really think you're taking anything off of Amon-Ra St. Brown's plate because he's such a difference maker as that power slot. And again, Williams, I think, will be a downfield receiver who, like, they use off the line of scrimmage, get him away from press coverage, you know, the flanker type. And that's why I still think, like, one more big-bodied X receiver could be added in the second round. Like, just for example, for people that know the prospects, like a Cedric Tillman type, big receiver, ball winner. That would be, like, the type of receiver they could target. So, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going to come down on Jameson Williams either. I think it does kind of come down to who they take in the draft this year. That's going to make a big difference to me. But Scott, we've covered the Lions from, I think, just about every angle here. This was a hell of a breakdown, so I appreciate you doing it with me, buddy. I know you're not necessarily focusing on football as much right now. You've got plenty of other eggs in the basket right now, but tell the people what you're working on out there that they can go check out.
Sure, doing a lot of baseball content. And if you're a fan of podcasts, I want people to know I'm on the Around the Bases podcast with DJ Short over Roto World. That's a Monday and Wednesday program. So we're having a ball with our partners there, doing a lot of baseball stuff. I think I'm writing a golf piece this week with Jay Busby. There's a big golf tournament coming up you guys may have heard of. It's in Georgia. You've heard of that, right, Matt? You golf title? Yeah.
Okay. I love to embarrass myself on the golf course, and I find golf to be relaxing to watch, actually. So there you go. I don't mind watching.
So the Masters is coming. Baseball's in full swing. And it's a great – a lot of changes in baseball this year. I think they've made the game more interesting. So Yahoo Fantasy Baseball is still open for business. If you didn't get in a season, you can in a league, you can still draft into the season. So why not check that out? And I'll be periodically checking in with you and the football peeps. We know football is a 12-month season. It's the behemoth in American sports. So I'll certainly have my toes in those waters as well.
All right, buddy. Well, we appreciate you breaking down the lines with us today, and we will talk to you hopefully very, very soon. Meanwhile, we'll be back right after the break with Yahoo's own Charles Robinson to talk about the Indianapolis Colts. We're back, and now I'm excited. I'm hyped. I'm thrilled to be joined by Yahoo senior NFL reporter Charles Robinson, the host of You Pod to Win the Game, which all of you people out there should be subscribed to. I'm subscribed to it. He's going to help us break down the Indianapolis Colts in our teams that will shape the draft series. Charles, what's going on, buddy?
What's going on, brother? Resident Colts expert today?
Yeah. Well, I honestly, Charles, I said to Brett, I was like, we need somebody with actual credibility to talk about the Colts, like some real NFL knowledge and insider-ness, because they're in such an interesting spot to me. And I mean, we can just jump right into it. Like, we don't have to waste a ton of time here to talk about the Colts because they, number one, haven't done a ton in terms of player acquisition.
Right.
But this offseason is all about the quarterback spot. So we can just get it started there. Like, they desperately need to get off the vomit-inducing ride that they've been on since Andrew Luck retired on the eve of the 2019 season. It's been the theme of their offseason ever since then, and it remains the theme now, perhaps more than ever.
Yeah, well, I mean, the number one bullet point from Jim Irsay is to resolve quarterback. You know, it's not when Shane Steichen went through his interview process, that's what they talked about. Like, this franchise is going nowhere until we can figure out quarterback. Jim Irsay had enough of the roller coaster, the half measures, the Carson Wentzes, the Matt Ryans. He wants a 15-year quarterback. He wants, when he looks at Kansas City, he wants a guy that is going to be in the saddle until his mid to late 30s. That's what he believes will compete. And he knows I've had two in my lifetime between Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck, and they don't come along often. You don't know how many opportunities they're going to have, you know, to sit at number four and have a couple of different options if you include the Lamar Jackson route too. So if they blow this, Chris Ballard is, I would say general manager Chris Ballard is probably out of a job if he doesn't get this pick right.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up Lamar, because I think similar to what we just talked about with Scott, where we could live in two worlds with the Lions, like world number one, they go down the quarterback path. World number two, they stick with Jared Goff and they just fortify the whole thing around him. I think with the Colts, you can do the same thing. There is world number one where they just draft a guy at fourth overall, which we'll get to that one in a second. But I want to talk about world number two. You mentioned it, Lamar Jackson. Like, they are the one spot, Charles, that I feel like hasn't publicly ruled out Lamar. And to me, the fit does make a lot of sense. Like, how realistic do you think that is?
Well, Jim Irsay came out and said he doesn't believe in guaranteed contracts, fully guaranteed contracts. So that's the hangup. I think in terms of interest, there's very little doubt that Jim Irsay would be interested in Lamar Jackson. But does he want to pay the freight? And at this point, where is Lamar Jackson on sticking to this demand that he has, this idea that he has to have essentially what is a fully guaranteed contract? What does that contract structure look like? And then not only that, even once they start to walk down that path, what are the assets involved? Okay, because if you sign him to a contract, you're only giving up two first-round picks. I think Baltimore, almost any deal he gets signed to in free agency as a franchise-tagged player who can negotiate with other teams, that'll match that, because they're not giving him away for two first-round picks. I think if you were to call and say, hey, I've got three first-round picks, that's the conversation starter. Then you get into where are they in the draft. And then you have Indianapolis that has that asset at four, which really makes it a much more workable trade, because that's something that, you know, Baltimore sees value in, sees a quarterback opportunity there at four. It would make a trade easier, because right off the front, you have a centerpiece option that the Ravens would covet. Now, that said, assets and, you know, figuring out a trade structure is great, but it all comes down to the money. And if there's something that can't be fixed between what Jim Irsay sees and what Lamar Jackson sees, it's just not something that's ultimately going to be on the table. But again, I look at the Ravens and I look at the Colts, and it makes sense. The trade partnership makes sense. And we'll get into that when we start to talk about the draftable quarterbacks and really what Indianapolis's coaching staff looks like. It's a fit for Lamar Jackson, but is the money a fit?
Yeah, and just last thing on Lamar, because I don't want to make this a Lamar thing. It's about the Colts, and I'm with you that I think Baltimore just probably matches almost any offer, and really none of this is a realistic thing to discuss, mostly because of that. But just last thing on Lamar, how much of a sense do we even really know what he wants? Like, you wrote a great piece that people should read about talking, that you talked to a bunch of agents, like, what would you do if you represented Lamar? People should definitely go check that out or listen to it on the podcast as well. How realistic do you think our view is of what Lamar wants right now?
Well, if you talk to the Ravens, and really that's the most realistic view that you're going to get, is to understand where they've gotten in contract negotiations with him. Now, in terms of like practical guarantees, what they think he's going to walk away with in terms of like the guarantees, they talk like, hey, we've gotten up into nearly $180 million in guarantees. Now, you know, Lamar's camp would disagree. They think that those guarantees are more in the $130 to $140 million range. So many, I guess, offers or so many routes have been surveyed by the Ravens at this point. It's hard to really understand, like, put your finger on one deal that was closest, because they've tried short-term, they've tried long-term, they've tried guaranteed money, they've tried a multitude of different routes, and nothing has really worked, and they don't even have a sense for what would be close at this point, which is why I think they always fall back on the mindset that he wants a fully guaranteed deal. He wants something that's in the range of 5 years, $250 million. That's where that number's coming from. So when you hear 5 years, $250 million, fully guaranteed, that's the sense that the Ravens have gotten in negotiating with him in terms of what would close a deal. Is that accurate? I don't know. I mean, you tell me. Like, Lamar Jackson to me has been so opaque about exactly what anything would take. I think even with the Ravens, why would we know? We're not even at the negotiating table with the guy. They are, and they don't even know.
Is this the weirdest contract negotiation that you can remember in sport? Yeah,
yeah,
I mean, by far, right?
It's not even close. Yeah, it's completely bizarre. This was like years of after year three, because Lamar was representing himself, you would talk to the Ravens, but you'd also talk to other teams that were trying to dial in their own quarterbacks. So at the time, the Browns were trying to dial in whether or not they wanted to extend Baker Mayfield. And, you know, so they're doing a behind the scenes deep dive on what's going on with Baltimore, because we feel like if Baker puts in a great year four, that's really what's going to guide us in terms of where the potential Baker extension comes in. And at that time, I remember Cleveland was like, it feels like complete nonsense. Like, there's just no clue whatsoever. And this was them, I think, having a dialogue with the Ravens. There's no clue whatsoever of what Lamar wants. This was from Cleveland. They're saying, it sounds like Baltimore can't even get him to really engage at all on an extension, which is insane. Like, that, now you never hear that with a big time cornerstone quarterback. And the crazy thing was, that was after 3 years and it never stopped. It was like 2 years of, they can't really get him to engage. They can't get him to nail down a number. And then finally it got to the point at really what I think solidified everything in the wrong direction was, as soon as the Watson deal hit, it was, well, he's not taking less than that. So, you know, start with the Watson deal and, you know, 5 years, $230 million fully guaranteed, and add a dollar to that. That's where they start the negotiations. And I think right out of the box, Steve Bisciotti and the Ravens were like, that's not going to work for us. So,
yeah, I had to pick your brain on it. Not just because the Colts seem like the one very somewhat reasonable landing spot, like I could see this happening, but two, just because it is so incredibly weird. And I also find like 95% of the way the media covers it and talks about it to be like nauseating and really weird anyways. So yeah, had to pick your brain on that, but let's get back to the realist.
Here's the thing too. I mean, you bring this up, Colts fans who are listening and watching this, they should care about that. They should study that, because that, if that's your quarterback, you should go ahead and go through this process, see what he's, you know, look at him on social media, how he's interacted. Look at, you know, because you have to understand that if you're a Colts fan and you're pulling for the Lamar Jackson deal, you better know what you're getting, and you're going to understand what you're getting if you really peel back the onion the last couple of years. Also, from an injury standpoint, all those other things. If Colts fans are sitting here going, why are they talking about Lamar Jackson so much? Because if he's your quarterback, you're really going to want to think about all these different things, because you're now going to be tied to him in an absolute concrete way for, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Right. And theoretically, hopefully everybody, you know, involved would hope that this would happen. Eventually there would be another contract discussion. And I mean,
yeah, that could come up again. Yeah. I mean, right. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Because you sign him, let's say you get him for 4 years. I mean, the next contract, he's still going to be in his prime. You know, you'd think his early 30s. Nope, now he has a depreciating asset in his skill set in the run game. So you don't, you know, it all depends on where that avenue of his game is. But you're right. I mean, that's a really smart thing to bring up. Like, if you're an acquiring team, you're also acquiring a future contract negotiation, not just this one. You are acquiring, ideally, a second and maybe even a third contract negotiation with him. Think about that too. That's food for thought.
Yeah, that sounds like a real treat based on how the last, not just few months, but the last years have gone for the Baltimore Ravens. Sounds like a great situation to be in. And again, I just find the way like so much media covers this situation to be extremely eye-rolling at best. But let's get into the probably more realistic avenue for the Colts, which is fourth overall pick.
Yeah.
They could trade up to three. You know, it seems like a lot of teams potentially could trade up to three. Although Chris Ballard, like you brought him up earlier, he's been such a, I'm not going to do something just because everybody wants me to do it. I'm not going to sling around money and resources just because people want me to do it. So I would imagine they stick and pick. And Charles, I look at this offensive roster, and like, if you squint at it, I do think it's really set up to be a nice incubator for a young quarterback. You have a veteran center in Ryan Kelly. I know he didn't have his best year last year, but we have seen, like, I think of the Herbert example with Corey Linsley. Like, that was a huge thing for them to have that veteran center. You know, they have theoretically an offensive line that could bounce back. I'm a big Michael Pittman fan. I think he could be a true number one receiver. I like Alec Pierce as like a jump ball guy. And Shane Steichen, we could talk about the Anthony Richardson factor of all of this, but we've seen him design a really great offense, or be a part of designing a really great offense focused around a mobile quarterback.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's not, the assets are already like baked into the offensive line. So you need the offensive line to bounce back. I think it could. Okay. It's still at one point the talent met the expectations. So it's the there is still talent there to be a good offensive line. You have a running back in Jonathan Taylor,
who mentioned Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, if Jonathan Taylor can stay healthy, you know, remember, this is, what's he, like 26? I think he's still, you know, you're still talking about somebody who should have, you know, again, health permitting, and you probably want to do some maintenance on the number of, you know, touches you put on him over the next, like, 24 years.
Yeah, 24 years old. He's still 24. Squarely in a great year.
Wow, he's even younger than I thought. Holy cow. Yeah, so look, if health permitting, you should have a good 4 to 5 years, right, out of Jonathan Taylor. I think, you know, you should measure out your running backs to about 29. And if you do the proper maintenance, you keep them healthy, you should be able to have top-end running backs who are very good pieces for, you know, that amount of time, that frame. So you have about another 4 or 5 seasons out of him. That's good for a young running back, or excuse me, that's good for a young quarterback, because you should be able to, if it is the right quarterback, by year two, year three, you're turning in a very competitive direction, right? You're like, let's talk about like Jacksonville. You look at Jacksonville, Trevor Lawrence. Next year, okay, now you're looking at Trevor Lawrence and saying, hey, year three, he should probably, now they're competing for like AFC, maybe the AFC title, maybe the Super Bowl. They're like in that window. That's a realistic expectation for quarterbacks nowadays. You know, they play enough snaps. They're active enough. They're developed enough coming out of college now that you should be competing with them by year two and three. If the rest of the team's built out properly, you should be able to think AFC title game, Super Bowl, especially by year four. So I do think offensively, it makes a lot of sense for the Colts. They do have pieces. They have the right head coach. So to me, at least from that unit standpoint, dropping a quarterback, the right quarterback in the middle of it, would turn the team pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think that anyone who follows the NFL closely, and especially the quarterbacks and the development of quarterbacks, a lot of these prospects, I think, don't fail. They end up getting failed. And, you know, certainly you could argue that has happened for a lot of the recent busts along the way. But this situation, like, they're set up to go. They're set up to go with a young quarterback. And they do have Gardner Minshew, too, who's a, you know, knows the system type of backup.
Right.
Backup. I think if they wanted to let a guy like Richardson or Levis sit, because we probably don't expect Bryce Young or CJ Stroud to be there. We expect them to go with the first two picks. Do you buy into this, any of this buzz that like Houston could not take a quarterback at two?
I think if Houston, I absolutely buy into it. If Houston likes one quarterback, that's possible. This, you should never, none of us should assume that Houston is sitting there going, yeah, you know what? We like all four, or even we like two. You need to like two. If you're sitting at two, you need to like two quarterbacks. You might like two, but the second quarterback, you're probably, you could be sitting there going, we don't want to take the guy at two. We think he's the right asset at 12. You know, maybe they like Richardson, but they go, we don't think he's the number two pick. The thing about where the Colts are at four, if you're going to, if you like a quarterback and you're like, we will draft him at four, you will draft him at three, you will draft him at two, and you probably would draft him at one. So if it's, let's say they like Bryce Young and Richardson, right? And they're not going to get Bryce Young. Let's say they're not going to get Bryce Young. Okay, well, then you would take Richardson at any of the spots in front of you, two and three as well. The thing that's intriguing about Houston is, and the Colts should worry about this, if they only like Bryce Young, let's say, and Bryce Young ends up getting drafted, Houston is then sitting there at two, and I don't know that there's another asset out there that they necessarily like as much as potentially moving back. So I think what Houston would do is they would call the Colts and say, if you got a quarterback in mind, we're going to call the teams behind you.
You know? Better get your ass up here.
Yeah, you better get your ass up to two. And, you know, so don't worry about three. Start worrying about two. We see some defensive players, like let's say it's a Will Anderson. I know they think a lot of Will Anderson. Maybe they're sitting there going, we could get Will Anderson at four. So call the Colts and just threaten them. Say, hey, you know, if you like Richardson, we're going to let another team snake you and get up here. Maybe it's that kind of a scenario. So right off the bat, I think there's a chance that you have to worry about potentially losing out on him in not only the three spot, but also the two spot. And everything is going to matter in terms of the number of quarterbacks you think are draftable in these slots. And I guarantee you, none of these teams up there, one, two, four, maybe Detroit, six, maybe even Seattle at five, I guarantee you none of those teams think all four of those quarterbacks are draftable. Right. I guarantee you they probably don't think three quarterbacks are draftable. Normally, teams in this situation, they have a one and a two that they usually like if it's a group of four that they realistically think could go. that they would be comfortable selecting those players.
Yeah, I think so often on the outside, we do that, right? Like, oh, shoot, they'll just take whichever one.
Whoever's left.
As if NFL teams have ever, you know, been that flexible in the way they look at things, or like they don't know. All these guys are so different, right? Stroud is so much different than Richardson. Young is so much different than Levis. All these guys are so different that, and, you know, Lance Ierlein, who works for NFL.com, put out a mock today where he had Bryce Young going number one and the Texans, you know, going ahead and not taking a quarterback.
Okay.
And he's super connected.
Lance is very connected in the franchise, the Texans. I mean, we both, Lance and I both live here in Houston. Okay.
Yeah.
I can tell you, Lance is very connected inside the Houston Texans franchise. And if Lance is mocking that, I'm going to tell you right now, that's probably indicative of, and I think he's probably right, that the Texans really, really like Bryce Young and would really, really like the Panthers to take CJ Stroud or whoever the hell else at one. Mm-hmm. And give them the opportunity to take Bryce Young into.
Yeah, I saw Lance basically say that, one, like, mock drafts are exercised. They're like, hey, what if this thing happened? You know, which that's part of it. But also, we know the connections. And really, I think we just should prepare ourselves that the way we're thinking about the draft, like how chalky it might not be the way that we're thinking about it right now, right. Which is a good exercise, especially for the Colts. Because, Charles, I'll see your scenario and raise you a scenario. What if somebody else wants to trade to two to take CJ Stroud if Bryce Young does go number one and the Texans aren't interested in Stroud, and then somebody goes up to three to get the card for the Cardinals pick, and then they're sitting there at four and maybe they're like Will Levis, like we don't like Will Levis, you know? I mean, that's certainly a scenario that could happen here.
Yeah, and that's, you have to, I think what's important here is try to understand what you think the Colts are built, what quarterback you think they are built to invest in, right? So let's think about this for a second. I can tell you Chris Ballard, what sticks out in my mind in this scenario is when Jordan Love was falling in the draft a few years ago, I know Chris Ballard liked him a lot, but felt like Jordan, like he was like, oh, he's a toolsy guy. There's a lot to like here, but there's some serious significant development that's got to take place. And I think he would have been comfortable at a certain point drafting Jordan Love. But I know his thought process was probably got to sit him at least a year.
Yeah.
You know, maybe even a little longer to get him prepared. So, you know, he's a general manager. I think from that experience, in my mind, he's a general manager who will take a quarterback with the commitment to develop him, to sit him if he has to sit him, if he thinks it's the right guy. OK, so there's that. You have Shane Steichen, who obviously is coming out of the Philadelphia experience, RPO quarterback, someone who needed quite a bit of development, particularly in his passing game on the NFL level, right? Mm-hmm. You have Cam Turner, right, who's the quarterback's coach. Where does Cam Turner come from? Well, Cam Turner, a guy was in Arizona, right? Okay, well, what's in Arizona? Kyler Murray, another quarterback that is it's a two-way quarterback. It's a system where there is run capability built into it. And then even you go a little further back, he was in Carolina. When who was in Carolina? I don't know. A certain big quarterback that, you know, ran, had an arm. Like, I mean,
that Anthony Richardson might get mentioned in the same sentence with sometimes.
Anthony Richardson might get some Cam Newton, you know, comparisons, some comps. So again, that's your quarterback's coach, right? Then you have Jim Bob Cooter, right? So Jim Bob Cooter, last year is in Jacksonville. The year before that, he's in Philadelphia. Now he's had a lot of different style. He had, you know, Matt Stafford, mm-hmm. obviously in Detroit. He's had some different styles of quarterbacks, but if you just want to run.
Famously neutered Matt Stafford to being like a popgun quarterback.
Yeah, right. But if you look at the last 2 years, what his experience has been, particularly last year, in Jacksonville, you're talking about a big quarterback who's got the ability, got the athleticism to make plays. And if he's got to go off script or whatever, or if you occasionally want to work in an RPO angle, you can do that. The entire staff, to me, when you stare at it, is not built for Will Levis. I just don't see it. There are too many. Will Levis he's a pocket guy. He's a pocket quarterback, you know, and I don't know that this staff is built for that kind of a player. And then, you know, CJ Stroud, kind of the same deal. Like, I don't know that it would be built for a CJ Stroud. So Anthony Richardson makes sense from what you see the coaching staff has molded in the past. The problem with Anthony Richardson, whenever, you know, all these teams I've talked to, even the teams that have kind of started to warm up a little bit on it not just being athleticism to wow everyone, they all agree on the same thing. It could be a complete disaster if this is a kid who goes in the top five and then is expected to start producing right away. They all agree he needs significant time to develop. And I think that's why Gardner Minshew is important in this equation, because Gardner Minshew is a good enough quarterback to commandeer your team for half a season, maybe even a little bit longer. And he also fits, obviously, that coaching staff that's, you know, the head coach is very familiar with him. You have guys in that staff that are very familiar with him. So Richardson makes sense, you know, and I think if you like him at four and you got an opportunity to move to two and it doesn't destroy your franchise, you know, it doesn't destroy the future picks, I think Ballard would have to consider it. I just don't know if sitting at four, he's not taking a chance at somebody moving up. I, like you said, this is going to be a chaos draft. I totally believe that. I think a lot of things that we expect to happen won't happen the way that we think. And even that number one pick, I've never fully understood why Vegas was so hard and fast on it being CJ Stroud right from the jump.
Yeah, a lot of mocks have started to transition to Bryce Young, and which that could be another smokescreen. Maybe they want the Texans to jump one pick up to there too, which that has also been rumored. But yeah, the more I think about it, the Texans too have every incentive to say to Indy, like, yeah, we're in our same division, but if our evaluation is CJ or if our evaluation is Anthony Richardson is not a guy, like there's enough concerns, sure, go ahead, give us an asset to come up to number two to take a player that we don't believe in. That's definitely part of it. But I agree with you, Richardson makes sense. Just last thing on the Gardner Minshew part of it. I think Gardner Minshew's like, if you're trying to project the Colts for fantasy this year, like you want to, like I just admitted earlier, I'm a big Michael Pittman guy. I love Michael Pittman. I think he'd be a really good player. Gardner Minshew is good enough to throw like 10 balls a game at Michael Pittman. And then I think the Colts roster is like, again, it could be pretty good. Like, do you think Gardner Minshew could be the, what we just talked about with Jared Goff being a bridge quarterback to somebody else for the Lions, or a Alex Smith for Patrick Mahomes, obviously being the greatest example? Like, could Gardner Minshew be a Bud Light version of that?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, a Bud Light version. Like, I wouldn't put him on the level of Goff. I don't think, I mean, Goff, for as much as we bang on him, he has a skill set that exceeds Minshew. I think Minshew's like, he's going to be the Tyrod Taylor of, you know, this era. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to, like, to me, or a Josh McCown type who's just a merc. He's going to run around to different teams that like him, knowing that, hey, he's a starter.
Bud Light Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, Bud Light Ryan Fitzpatrick. Like, he'll be a guy that'll come out and, you know, he can man a few games for you. You like it. You know, you see the skill set. But then eventually he hits a wall, you know, runs into a spate of turnovers. Or there's potential injury factor with him. And you know, that's what he is. But I mean, from a fantasy perspective, I think if they take Richardson, I don't want to say that, hey, go get Minshew, because you're going to get at least half a season out of him. Maybe you'll get a full season out of him, because I just can't rule out, when I go back to when Josh Allen was drafted, I mean, the entire draft process, it was, got it, man, got to sit that kid. You might have to sit that kid 2 years. Like, it's just, everybody says, this is raw. That's raw. The, you know, look on the tape at the competition. Look at when he played a Power 5 school, what he did. You know, the incompletion percentage, or the completion, low completion percentage, all this stuff. And then what happened? He goes and they instantly plug him in. And you're just like, oh, my God. And then you go through a year of, maybe this wasn't the best idea. Then year two, you're like, oh, wait, okay. And then by year three, you're like, holy shit, they're geniuses. Yeah. You know, and so could a team do that with Richardson? Could the Colts do that with Richardson? Absolutely. If he gets in there and you start watching him next to Gardner Minshew and you go, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Like, let's go ahead and roll with the, you know, the kid with the cannon arm and the athleticism and all these different things. We'll figure it out. You know, Justin Fields, right? Justin Fields is another good example where it was like, you know, when are they going to, you know, when are they going to move forward with this? When are they going to move forward with this? And then, you know, we kind of go back to just this past season. And I found myself being like, maybe they should have just, when they took him, been like, this is him. He's the starter right out of the gate. We're throwing everything at him right. And, you know, as soon as we go into the passing program following the draft, because maybe he would have been further along when we got to last season instead of dicking around the way that they did.
Yeah, these athletic phenoms, I think we think about it as, oh, they're going to eventually elevate the ceiling of our offense, but that skill set as a rusher actually gives you to gets you to a floor, I think, faster than just a drop back passer at this point too. So, and hey, you mentioned Josh Allen, like his rookie year, he was throwing like Kelvin Benjamin and Robert Foster, who was a UDFA. Like, Anthony Richardson will be better set up to succeed with this Colts offense than Josh Allen.
Here's the scary thing too. Think about that draft, right? I mean, this that draft compared to this draft is pretty similar. Because we went up to that draft, people forget that literally the morning of the draft, I was still getting clowned for having written after the Senior Bowl that Baker Mayfield was in play for the number one overall pick. And people were like, he's not going to be the number one pick. He's not as stupid. And then we found out that day. I mean, I literally remember sitting there and, someone's like, hey, you were right. You know, it's going to be Baker. And so you had Baker go at one, right, who was what, a shortish quarterback, but he had a lot of success. And like, but, you know, there's questions about like, well, when he gets in the NFL, like, if you know, is he going to get beat up? You know, kind of the way that he plays, you know, could potentially expose him to some injury. Does he have the physical stature to be, you know, durable enough? What are we talking about, right, with Bryce Young, right? Like same, you know, oh, look at all the pieces around Baker. You know, are we evaluating him properly given the talent on the offensive line, given the talent, the receivers and the backfield? Are we over-evaluating his talent, right? Okay, so I think you could draw some comparisons to the assessment value between Bryce Young and Baker. I'm not saying they're one-off players or anything, but then you get to C.J. Stroud, right? And, well, is C.J. Stroud going to be accurate enough on the NFL level? He looks accurate, great, but Ohio State often leads the nation in open wide receivers. His ball location isn't perfect all these different times. You know, we're having conversations about Sam Darnold, about, you know, can he be accurate enough? Is he going to, you know, is he going to be just a first read guy in the NFL, all these different things. Josh Rosen, right, was the guy who fell to 10 in that draft. We're like, what happened? Why did this guy slip? It's like Will Levis. Remember, there was a time where we thought Will Levis might be the top pick in the draft. Mm-hmm. Now he might be the 10th pick in the draft. There was a time we thought Josh Rosen might be the top pick in the draft. Then he became the 10th pick in the draft. And then Anthony Richardson potentially could have played that Lamar role where it's like, this guy slips down the draft for whatever reason. Oh, he's too raw, this or that. We don't like this about him. We don't like that about him. But I think what's changed with Richardson, and I straight up had an evaluator say this to me. I am tired of questioning and passing on quarterbacks who have elite athleticism that I think, oh, there's so much more that has to develop in their game. I literally talked to an evaluator, like, I'm tired of that. I'm tired of passing on these guys. Like, I can't keep doing this because it's killing me how many of these guys I've passed on and they've, you know, proven to be the better pick in the long run. So the parallels in that draft, I think it would just teach us that realistically, we're probably looking at one star out of this foursome, right? We're probably looking at, you know, maybe a solid starter somewhere out of this foursome and two straight up busts, guys that we would consider busts. That's pretty scary when you think about that.
Yeah, especially with how much certainty we have around these guys right now. Well, Charles, I think we learned a lot here, not just about the Colts, but also y'all out there better be like expected to be blown away on draft day, I think, based on what we just talked about here with the Colts and all the potential like percolations that could go about with them. So it's definitely going to be a draft that gets weird and wild pretty quick. Charles, tell the people about what you got work going on right now and especially about your podcast that all of them should be subscribed to.
Yeah, well, check out the podcast. We're actually right now working on the All Juice team. So that's going to be coming out in the coming days. Obviously, we've continued on that legacy from Trez Paylor's days. So keep an eye out for that, as well as I think we're going to at some point roll out. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention this or not, but I'm going to go ahead and mention it. I'm going to make the executive decision here. I think there could be something going on with the All Juice tees and hoodies that people are so familiar with. I'll let someone else make the exact announcement, but I think there's something forthcoming there. And then obviously check out your pod to win the game. We try to get people ahead of the news when we can, where we can. So we would love to have a little of that cross pod synergy. So people come and check out our show. So we really appreciate it. And we got to get you on. I feel like you're this in-house. It feels like it's like Howard Stern and Don Imus. Like, how come we're not how come we're not associating our brands more closely? We work for the same place.
Hey, I'm all about breaking down the walls, baby. So anytime you guys want me on, especially if you got some receiver stuff to talk about, I'm always down to talk about that. So yeah, man. Anytime,
oh yeah, reception perception, baby.
Yeah, hey, it's our time, that's for sure. So yeah, listen, if you're listening to this show and you want to be a smart NFL fan, I would hope that if you're listening to this, you want to be a smart NFL fan. Go listen to You Pod to Win the Game. I listen. I subscribe. You should do it too. So appreciate you, Charles. This was awesome. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, brother.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Keeping it in-house today. Shout out to my colleagues, Scott Pienowski and Charles Robinson. You can get Scott at Scott_Pienowski on Twitter. And of course, Charles is at Charles Robinson. What an efficient handle there. I'm at Matt_BYB. And of course, while you're on Twitter, whatever the logo is at this point, you can make sure you're following at Yahoo Fantasy as well. I'm going to be back on Thursday with Charles McDonald, another Yahoo colleague, on Thursday for a deeper dive on those big four quarterbacks we just talked about with Charles Robinson. And hey, maybe we'll even get Charles to talk about one of the other quarterbacks too. See y'all then. Until then, we're out.